C1T. Number 6B.
We come to the subtone of principle, where we see that by bringing thought in accord with principle, trusting in principle, the superiority of spiritual power over sensuous power is gained. So principle here is expressed through the idea of spiritual power. You know that spiritual power in the order of the third degree, under the term understanding, you have wisdom as the first mind, then purity as spirit, then spiritual understanding as soul, and then as the fourth spiritual power, principle. So principle is that spiritual power which demonstrates itself, and here it demonstrates itself over sensuous power. So she says that the central point of Christian Science is the superiority of spiritual power over sensuous power. Then she shows the difference between the healing with argumentation and the healing through science, which is naturally principle. Whereas healing through arguments is not science. That's very clear. Healing through arguments is ordinary metaphysics that any other metaphysical group practices, power of positive thinking and so on, without that they have to claim themselves to be Christian scientists. And so she points out here, and that's a very good statement in order to show the place value of argumentation and science, that she says the letter and mental argument are only human auxiliaries to aid in bringing thought into accord with what? With the spirit of truth and love. So here the difference between the method of argumentation and the method of science is brought out very clearly. Namely, that healing through arguments, through affirmation and denial, is really only purely metaphysical, that has nothing really to do with divine metaphysics and nothing to do with science itself, because it's only a human auxiliary. But we want to, a human auxiliary to aid in bringing thought into accord really with science. So we don't want to have to do with human auxiliaries, we want to have to do with the real thing, and that is the spirit of truth and love. So science is always that which goes out from the divine principle and not up to the divine principle. So in science we use the ideas of mind and spirit and soul and principle, life, truth and love in our healing work, and we don't use the mental arguments of affirmation and denial. This has been the method in the last century, where Mrs. Eddy could see that at her time in the 70s and the 80s, that the time was not ripe for the people to understand really the science of being, and so she said that she had to reduce it to the level where the students were, and she had to reduce it to that low level of mental healing through affirmation and denial. But she also says, especially in the divinity course, that she never used it in her practice, that that is not Christian science, and therefore we must see that science rests on the divine principle and lets principle operate the way principle wants to operate. This is a very short passage. We come to life. Here he says, all right, now what is your trust in principle and your practice with principle? He says the very first thing is naturally that you first have to try it out for yourself. Make it first a practice in your own, for your own behalf, Here we have the epitome by trusting first truth in our own behalf. In our own behalf, see, it's individual. We can help others too. This is very interesting. I always feel that charity begins at home, that practice begins at home, that we first try out that principle by helping ourselves and being, as she says, being right yourself first, by utilizing the moral might of mind in order to walk over the waves of error. The quote here, that we should use the energies of mind in your own behalf, or you can exercise little or no power for others' help. Well, this goes against what most students always feel. Most students say, well, it is so much easier to help somebody else but yourself. So much more difficult to heal oneself than the others. This is not true. This is absolutely a lie. It is much easier to help oneself in science than to help somebody else in science. It is true or right to say that on a mental argumentation basis, therefore on a metaphysical basis, therefore on a not Christian science basis, it may be easier to help the other one than to help oneself. Why do I say such a thing? I say such a thing because the mental argument that we employ, which is not Christian science, which is a reduced sense to, or to the level of mentality of affirmation and denial, there naturally it is much easier to deny that the patient has no pain and doesn't feel any pain than it is perhaps to say to oneself, I feel no pain, when one aches under pain. So that may be possible. But when we deal in science, when we heal with science, with the spirit of truth and love, and not with mental arguments, then this argument doesn't come into consideration. Why? Because when we treat in science, we anyway put the whole body, the whole proposition, the whole man, the whole mortal, right first away into a corner and disidentify ourselves with that whole condition, and turn right away from that condition. And the very first thing we do is that we look into the infinitude of the divine mind that only knows ideas anyway, that does not know a body that has pain and that suffers. So in science we go out from the divine principle. In that divine principle we see that the suffering body or a suffering man is not us, and therefore we are not interested in that suffering body. Not at all. And we look right out into the infinitude of mind's ideas, mind's universe of ideas, and see that that alone is man. And we certainly can find quicker a state of harmony and balance and beauty and magnitude and grandeur because we consider these terrific ideas than it is to make the patient known of this beautiful vision. It is much easier for us to establish the vision of science than it is to give that to the patient who may not know very much yet about science at all. So don't believe that. If you believe that story that it is difficult to heal oneself, you know that you are not treating yourself rightly anyway, nor treating your patient rightly anyway. And that's what she says here. How can you help the other if you can't help yourself? Out of what fullness of life are you going to help the other one if you can't have the fullness of life within yourself? We are the well of life. In our treatment, that we draw from the well of life. Well, if we don't have a full sense of life for ourselves, how can we have a full sense of life for somebody else? A full sense of life is a full sense of life, and it's a full sense of life, and it's a full sense of life. It doesn't concern if it's he or me or she or the others. It's ideational and nothing else. We are not treating people. We are seeing in principle that principle only operates as the fullness of ideas and nothing else, not as people. So here she picks that out and says, you must be aware, really, of what's going on, that naturally if you have an unsuitable condition for healing the sick is when you yourself have not the full sense of your own manhood. Namely, if you have a mental state of self-condemnation, how can you heal somebody? How can you heal yourself? If we say, I'm sick and I'm the sinner, then you can't heal yourself. That's natural. Because that would be a wrong basis, a basis of lack. We would go out from a basis of lack. A mental state of guilt, she says, is naturally not the fullness of life out of which you can heal somebody else. A faltering and doubting trust in truth is naturally not the full sense of life. It's meager, it's lacking, and therefore it cannot heal. That's quite clear. Being lost in the belief and fear of disease or sin yourself, you can't heal, naturally. That's true. See how she builds up and says, naturally you must have a trust in that principle which is the fullness of life. But if you yourself feel that everything is lacking within you, and that there is a limited sense within you, then there is nothing with which you can heal. And you can't heal the other one either. So, she says, therefore, use the moral might of mind in order to walk over the waves of error. Gives a beautiful sense of exaltation of life. Then comes the next symptom of truth. My epitome here is God bestows his trust only upon a worthy messenger. Can you see something here? That's a phenomenon that happens quite often in the textbook, that she would build up a subject up to the point of life and then change the standpoint very often when it comes to truth and love. Here she does that too. She has built up that tone of trust. Trust in mind, in the medicine of mind, trust in the power of good spirit, and no trust in evil and matter. Then, trusting in soul that the perfect concept will be formed, that the identity will crystallize in your life, so that you see what is going on and what is really at work. Then in principle, that trust, that principle is a power that is above sensuous power, therefore it's a power of demonstration. Then in life, a trust in the fullness of life as a demonstrating power. And now, at the point of principle, it changes the standpoint and says, and if you have had that trust, as if she would say that, she doesn't say it actually, but she puts it away as if she would say, if you have had that trust in God, then God will trust in you. And will God have his trust in you? He will trust you, and he will entrust you with his message. It's a passage that always is balm for anyone that works in science and that pioneers in science. Did we read the epitome? The epitome was that God bestows his trust. Now you see, he bestows the trust only upon a worthy messenger. The marginal heading here is the trust of the all-wise, that is the trust of God. And again has that juxtaposition of a human teacher and be taught by God, God as teacher. There's a student that is taught by a human teacher. Well, he may be mistaken in judgment and demonstration. Well, we know that. That's absolutely right. That's necessary. A human teacher is a human teacher. And we can't expect a human teacher to be a divine teacher. It's still a human, and therefore he has all what a human also has, and therefore a student can be mistaken. But what is the other standpoint? If God is our teacher, if we go to God and say, I let myself be taught by you, by the textbook, then, Mrs. Eddy says, then he cannot be mistaken. Then he is no more a human teacher when he is taught by God. Then he can no more be mistaken. And then comes that great quotation which I like to read. God selects for the highest service one who has grown into such a fitness. Can you see? He has grown into such a fitness. It's that one that has gone through that law of mind, spirit unfolding, letting spirit separate the tares from the wheat, and let soul define the purpose, let soul form the perfect concept. Then what the teacher has within itself is formed by mind, spirit, soul through that wonderful 3 days of creation. And then he cannot be mistaken, because that was a birth that was taking place within himself. He hasn't learned it. He hasn't studied it. He hasn't read it. He hasn't copied it from some other teacher. It's a birth, something that has grown in him. And so he has grown into such a fitness for it as renders any abuse of the mission an impossibility. Isn't that terrific? A human teacher can be mistaken, and that's natural. But if you let yourself be taught by God and not by a human teacher, you let yourself be taught by God. What is God? God is the creative Genesis sense of the word, that creative word. So if you go through the first day of creation and let yourself be unfolded through the second day of creation with all patience, and so that the third day appears as the dry land within you, you stand on solid ground. You are what God taught us. You have not learned it. You are the very being of that what you have gone through that birth. And therefore, it renders an abuse of it impossible. It cannot be more anymore abuse the teaching. The all-wise does not bestow his highest trust upon an unworthy. It's not possible. Because if he goes through that Genesis process, he certainly is not unworthy. He certainly has gone a line that filtered out at every day of that development everything that does not belong to that development. And therefore is worthy to be used by God. So when he, God, commissions a messenger, It is one who is spiritually near himself. And one always had that feeling with John Dory. You see, it took him 20 years, now 30 years. Took him, can I count then? Yeah, 30 years. Huh? Took him 30 years, really, from the inception of what the order of the days of creation means. Way back, 1914, 15, around about that time, up to the middle of the 40s, until really that order of the days of creation became so clear, formed such a perfect, clear concept, that it rendered really a misuse impossible for him. But when one has lived within that period and has seen that grow, just 1 year after another year, just slowly grow, sturdily grow, and just felt, well, this is no more John Dolly, this is now the seed of God that unfolded within himself, and you cannot misuse God. Therefore, it rendered him, so to say, fit, to bring it out and not to be abused. Therefore, he could stand. He could stand. Who could stand at that time? Nobody could have stood at that time. It meant such a terrific job to stand at that time. You haven't the faintest idea anymore what those times were. Think back of 1940 and 45, what the movement was in the best development, rich, prosperous, in the heydays of the movement. What chance did you have to stand up against it? None whatsoever. Except you were the remnant, and you had the remnant within yourself, and that could no more be abused. And so he stood like a rock there. Nothing could shake him. And that's what we have to see, each one of us too, that we grow through the word order, spiritually. And then the winds can blow. The winds may blow so mightily that it bends us, but never breaks us. But never breaks us. So one thought of God, he says, no person can misuse this mental power if he is actually taught of God. That makes the idea safe. And you see, all the time one has to see that one is taught of God. That was even in the Bible, you see, we always could see that somebody had to be taught of God in order to stand. Like Paul would also say, how shall they preach if they be not sent? And Mrs. Eddy too said that she would only really be teaching because through the effectual working of his power, and that it was apparently through divine power that the revelation came to her. Do the same. Don't think Mrs. Eddy was an exception. She was an exemplar, just as Jesus was an exemplar. We have to go through the same order of development. We must be taught by God, not by Max. Never by Max. Be taught by those wonderful steps of mind, and have the seed of mind within you, and let that seed of mind be cherished and hugged and protected and loved, so that it can grow, that it patiently can grow and unfold and become stronger and stronger at the period of spirit, so that finally suddenly something gathers momentum and gathers form, and the perfect concept appear, and you feel the definiteness of the idea within yourself. And then you are safe. At the point of soul, you are safe. Nothing can destroy it anymore. She comes to the last subject of love, where she says, or where I made the epitome, saying, the more science is understood, see, give a teach a wise man, and he will yet be wiser. Teach a wise man to culture what he has, to culture the ideas of mind, and ponder the ideas of mind, and they will unfold through spirit, and they will unfold to the point of identification in soul. Teach a wise man, and the more science is understood, the less it can be abused. But side note here is integrity assured. Can you see again that safety here? So she says, the higher your attainment in the science of mental healing and teaching, the more impossible it will become for you intentionally to influence mankind adverse. Can you hear the tone of love? You cannot influence adverse to its highest hope and achievement. You know that we have to know. The moment you start in the work of science, you will be persecuted. You will be attacked. You can't help it. And then you have to know yourself. You have to be sure about yourself, or you fail. How can you know and be sure about yourself? Because they will say that what you teach is a false teaching. It's an erroneous teaching. That will be the very first attack. And within yourself, if you are a Christian and you want to do the good, you have to be sure that you are that it is absolutely impossible for you to influence mankind adverse to its highest hope and achievement. That you feel within yourself that love sense that you feel, no matter what people say, I know that I'm going to bless mankind with my teaching. And mankind at one time will acknowledge it. We may not live to that point where we see it happen, but the promise is there, because it's a law and not just a mystery. So here you get to your higher sense that if we trust principle that we can't help but be a terrific blessing for mankind. I guess a blessing that is 10 times or 100 times or 1,000,000 times bigger than what we at this moment really can figure out. That's principle. Okay? Tomorrow we take life and truth and love in the morning.